Welcome to Hope is Here. We're going to talk today about the reliability of scriptures. We're continuing our conversation with John Meyer. He is with a ministry called Radio Christi. You ought to check that out. Go to radiochristi.org. It's spelled like ratio, R-A-T-I-O, Christi, C-H-R-I-S-T-I, Christ with an I, radiochristi.org. And John, what does Radio Christi stand for?
It means the reason for or the reason of Christ. It's Latin, and it just means giving reasons and evidence for Christianity, essentially.
Well, we talked yesterday about apologetics. Why should you even care? If you didn't catch that program, I want to encourage you to go to our website, hopeishere.today. That's hopeishere.today, and catch that 14-minute program about apologetics, and I think you'd really be blessed by that. Well, John, today let's talk about the reliability of the scriptures. I mean, a lot of people say, oh, that book was written over 2,000 years ago. How does it apply today? More importantly, unfortunately, a lot of people and college students especially, which you have a passion for, almost one in five believe that the Bible's a fairy tale. So talk to us a little bit about the reliability of scriptures. Obviously, those of us that are followers of Jesus believe the Bible's reliable. But what can we say to those who don't actually trust the Bible?
Yeah, well, I think there's a couple of different lines of evidence that we can start with. Now, I'm not really trying to exaggerate here. There are volumes and volumes and volumes. There's a guy by the name of Lardner who lived a while ago, okay, in the 1700s. I'm trying to remember exactly. But he wrote 17 volumes on the evidence for Christianity that was just in the first few hundred years. All different connections outside of the biblical text and outside external evidences, we might call them. But there's just so much evidence that we can only plow through a tiny fraction of it today.
Well, give us some examples of maybe like internal evidence.
Sure. So there's interesting pieces of internal evidence, like looking at the something like the psychological profile of Jesus throughout the four Gospels, and that he has the same character throughout all four Gospels, which seems to show that everybody's not making up a character for Jesus. They're actually talking about a real person who actually existed. Another thing is something called undesigned coincidences, and these are interesting. Also another old argument, but it's starting to come back. A guy by the name of John James Blunt wrote an original book on this. And then modern view of this comes in Lydia McGrew's book called Hidden in Plain View. But here's the basic idea of what goes on in this. We basically have different views or different details that are put in to the different Gospels. And they're not intentionally put there to explain something in one of the other Gospels. They're put there because that's what actually happened. And these little tiny things end up collaborating and showing that the different views or the different Gospel writers are actually accessing the same reality. Let me just give an example. I think this is the best way to do it.
If you're listening, you're not a follower of Jesus, the Gospels are Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, the first four books in the New Testament. Go ahead and give us some examples there.
Yes,
from the Gospels.
It's good to clarify that. So Matthew 4:21 through 22 says, "Going on from there, he saw two other brothers, James, the son of Zebedee, and his brother John. They were in a boat with Zebedee their father, mending their nets, and he called them. Immediately they left the boat and their father and followed him." Now, there have probably been thousands of sermons on how Jesus calls his disciples, and his disciples drop what they're doing and go and follow him. But what you probably haven't heard a sermon on is this little piece here where he says they were mending their nets. Why? Why were they mending their nets? Well, you look around in the rest of Matthew, you could read the entire book of Matthew, and you will not find an answer to why they were mending their nets. However, Luke talks about what goes on just before this in his gospel. And so Luke chapter 5, 4 through 7 says, when he had finished speaking to them, he said to Simon, so that's Peter we're talking about here, put out into deep water and let your nets down for a catch. Master, Simon replied, we've worked hard all night long and caught nothing, but at your word, I'll let down the nets. When they did this, they caught a great number of fish, and their nets began to tear. So they signaled to their partners in the other boats to come and help them. They came and filled both boats so full that they began to sink. So here we have, you see that Luke is not saying, oh, I've read Matthew, and he talks about these nets being mended. I got to explain that somehow. That's not what's going on here. He's just saying what happened, and it happens to tell you exactly why Matthew says they are mending their nets, because the nets broke, they caught too many fish, and now Matthew says they were mending their nets when Jesus shows up to call them.
Well, I love that, and, you know, that's the thing you get, you know, like if you ask, you know, the old saying, if you have eyewitnesses at a, you know, a situation, that you'll get different people see different things in the right different way. But I love, as you said, it all collaborates together. Mm-hmm. And that's why, you know, people always say, well, I don't know if I believe the Bible. And, you know, my first question, have you read it? You know?
Right. So one of the things, too, using the word collaboration, I think I may have used that myself, but I think collaborate is a better word. So they sort of intertwine like a tapestry to give you one full picture. And it's not like two suspects who have gotten together to say, hey, what's our story going to be? Right. Very interestingly, if you look at details, like you saw an accident, somebody says the Ford hit the Chevy. Someone says the red car hit the blue truck. Okay. They're both saying the same thing, but they're not saying it in the same exact way. And those two come together to show that that's probably what happened.
Yeah, I love that. That's a great example there. All right, let's talk about an external example.
Okay, so there's external examples that we could grab from external history. One of those is a guy by the name of Flavius Josephus. And Josephus was a Jewish writer, but he was actually a traitor to the Romans. But the Romans helped him to finance and actually write a history of the Jews. And so in the Antiquities of the Jews, this is book 18, and this is chapter 3, section 3. It's a very famous piece. And what it says is, at this time, there was a wise man who was called Jesus, and his conduct was good, and he was known to be virtuous. And many people from among the Jews and the other nations became his disciples. Pilate condemned him to be crucified and to die. And those who had become his disciples did not abandon their loyalty to him. They reported that he had appeared to them 3 days after their crucifixion and that he was alive. Accordingly, they believed that he was the Messiah, concerning whom the prophets have recounted wonders. Now, he doesn't outright say, this guy's the Messiah. He's, you should follow him. But we wouldn't expect that from somebody who's not a follower of Jesus, right? What we do see in here is that there's a guy named Jesus. He was known for being a good guy. They claim he did wonderful works. He was condemned to die by Pilate, and he died by crucifixion, and that his disciples were claiming, hey, this guy's back from the grave, and maybe he's the Messiah, right? So that's all really interesting pieces of information to get from a source that's not a Christian, okay? It's connecting with and showing. And Josephus does a lot of that. This is the most forward of the passages because it specifically mentions Jesus. But there are all kinds of places where he's talking about, you know, why Joseph was afraid to go back to Judea when he came back, when they came back from Egypt. You don't see that in the biblical text, what Archelaus did. But if you want to know what Archelaus, the son of King Herod, did and why Joseph didn't want to go back there, you can read Josephus.
You know, I've heard people say, John, that the Bible's been transmitted so many times, it becomes like the telephone game and the text can't be trusted.
Right. This is a fairly popular view. And a lot of people take this idea from sort of common discussions on the internet or something of that nature. The idea that I whisper in your ear and you whisper in somebody else's ear and we're not exactly sure what the person's saying and it gets all messed up. And it's funny by the time you get around, you know, to the end, how messed up it is. That's not how oral tradition worked. Oral tradition in oral cultures. We're talking about people that were very good at memorization. People like Paul, who were Pharisees. It was not uncommon for them to have the entire Old Testament memorized. Okay, it was not uncommon for people in elementary school to have the first five books of the Bible, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, memorized. Okay, that's elementary school. So they were good at that. But then it's not just that, and there's a series of checks and balances there too. Mm-hmm. But once the text is written down, its transmission is a little different. People are making copies. People are writing down the copies as they go, and they're saying, well, here's a copy of the New Testament, and we're going to make a copy. Now, they would have to write it out by hand until the 1500s when the printing press was done. Now, sometimes those people made little errors. But the thing is that we've got so many copies, far more than any other ancient document. I think the next best one is Homer's Iliad, and it has somewhere around 2,000 different manuscripts. And that can be anything from the size of a postage stamp to an entire text. But the New Testament has 5,000, 5,500, some people, depending on how you count the manuscripts, up to close to 6,000 at this point. Now, that's important because when you start to combine all those together and you look at them and you compare them, most of them, you can say, okay, 99% of this is exactly the same. But these little pieces here aren't. Well, you say, which one is the right one? Well, compare it to the other 5,000 and see. So sometimes, a lot of times actually, these errors are things like misspelled names or word order, which doesn't even matter in Greek. It's interesting, but word order, you can put words in different order in Greek in the same sentence, and it doesn't even make a difference to what the sentence actually means.
Great stuff here. We're talking with John Meyer. He is with a ministry here in Lexington, Kentucky called Radio Christi. If you want to find out more about this organization, this ministry, go to their website. It's spelled like ratio, R-A-T-I-O, Christi, Christ with an I, .org. That's like ratio, Christ with an I, radiochristi.org. Or if you want to email John to contact him personally about this, it's J-O-N, John Meyer, M-E-Y-E-R, at radiochristi.org. Tune in tomorrow with us as we continue our conversation with John. We're going to talk about the church behaving badly, hypocrites, intolerance, crusades, and inquisitions. We'll see you tomorrow on Hope is Here.
CMI is your full-service human resources provider in Central Kentucky. For 15 years, CMI Human Resources has taken great pride in helping organizations and people work. Whether it's employee handbooks or help in filling a position, no job is too large or too small for CMI. Contact the professionals today at CMI Human Resources, 859-296-2800, or online at cmiconsulting.com.